Okay.
So.
I'm gonna have a lot of apologies to offer. All right, so what we're gonna do now is, as I said, we're gonna have a brief slideshow with some musical accompaniment. And then, if need be, we can take a few minutes of a real break. All right. And then to return and to give all the rest of you who have been listening an opportunity, if you wish, to say something about Lauren and about your recollections and memories of him. So, John, you want to start the slideshow and whatever?
Yeah, I hope this works well. Yeah, anyway, here it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, again, for making those photos available to us. All right, so that's it for the first half, more or less. I have oh, it's 2:23. So, if people will indulge me, I suggest that we not take a further break and just allow people to use the remaining time to speak. Keep in mind that I don't know how many of you are going to watch, but don't take too much time if that's possible. Okay. Anyway, thanks again to John for the slideshow. Yes. Okay. Raise your hand if you'd like to. Oh, no, raise your hand using the kind of the reactions kind of link at the bottom of the screen, where you'll see that there is a kind of, what is it, John? Where? Oh, it comes up as some as symbols. Actually, raise hand is a choice, so you can raise. It comes up as a small yellow hand in the corner.
Yeah, and if you're not seeing that, make sure that your screen is maximized. But John, you've already got people with their hands up, so you might as well just start to call.
Where I'm sorry, not. Oh, I see. I apologize. I managed to miss.
Yeah, you
Lee.
gotta go up quickly, so pay attention.
Okay,
Yeah,
sorry, Lee.
you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me, yes. Okay. Yeah, I met Lauren 2001, shortly after 9/11 attacks. Was in a meeting, and friends and I had put together this poster that we would wheat paste all over the place, and it had this big line, "Neither their war nor their peace." And I remember, like, I didn't know where that came from, and I didn't know who Lauren was at the time, but Lauren pointed it out. Yeah, that was from Trotsky. And anyway, it's just funny to think back that his writings became very important to me after that, but that was one of the only 2 times that I ever met him. And mostly his writings, were important to me for stuff that didn't have anything to do with science. But it's funny, the other time I saw him was when he talked about his Melville book in Oakland. I think it was 2007. And I remember asking in the Q&A, Lauren, do you think that the second law of thermodynamics is going to be proven wrong or something, like after capitalism? And it was something like that. And he said yes. And I remember thinking, like, that seems really silly. But now, I've more recently gotten really interested in Marxist critiques of, like, bourgeois distortions of science, and into Marxists that are influenced by, like, Ilya Prigozhin and non-equilibrium thermodynamics. And maybe that's what he was talking about. Anyway, this kind of just resonates with what, like, Arya was saying about Kepler could have been another way over Newton, and what Amiri was saying about taking responsibility for everything, the whole cosmos, literally. So I'm gonna have to relook at Lauren's work.
Lee,
Thanks.
quick. Lee, what's your last name so people know?
I go by Unruly. My legal name is Steve Fram, though.
Thank you. Dan, I guess.
I got to know Lauren beginning in the late 80s. We would meet every few months, every couple of months to discuss politics. There was a coffee shop in Midtown near the public library that would gather and just get together for often for 2 or 3 hours and just sort of converse. It was great. So people talk about Lauren's unified world view. It's also important to emphasize his unified historical view, in that he was very much a student of the present. He followed current events. He read the newspapers avidly. He analyzed the news. He was up on the latest developments. But he also brought to the these latest developments a deep, deep historical knowledge and a philosophical knowledge. So therefore, like you know, a I don't know, some New York Times story, was for him, like, it was just the tip of the iceberg. And he could relate it to other historical events and other epics, and draw connections, very, expertly and fluidly. He was just really a delight in that way. It was really stimulating. It was really important stuff. And he was a real student of history. You know, in academia, if you're a student of history, you sort of choose a period and you immerse yourself in it. But Loren was a student of all history, from ancient times up to the present. And so therefore he brought to bear this kind of cosmic analysis to bear on present day events, and it was very, very fruitful and very important. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anya, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Hi. I got to actually meet and spend time with Lauren only once. As many people have said, he was incredibly generous with his time. And he was very open and was there to spend an evening with me, having never met me before when he was already having trouble walking. He seemed confused as to what had drawn me, of all people, to him. So I want to answer that question. He seemed not to have been aware of the incredible respect and influence that he was having among a number of young transgender and queer Marxists who he mostly never met. I transitioned 20 years ago before the liberal world started hallucinating about how accepting and loving of transgender people it was, and it was incredibly isolated. And so I like a number of others, found Marxism as a way to get out of that claustrophobic isolated world in which one was encapsulated inside of one's identity in this really painful way. And I think that a lot of people found Lauren and his openness and his profound internationalism to be a sort of a role model approach to how to get out of that when the rest of the left saw transgender proletarians as walking identities, as being as being people who could be thought of only in terms of identity rather than as entire human beings trying to move towards that cosmic sensuous concreteness that Amiri spoke so beautifully about. And in that respect, he remains a role model to me. I wish that we could have met when his health was still a little bit better. I think that he will remain a role model for myself and many others for our entire lives. And his commitment to find a way forward, to find those connections with others, even when that is not directly visible, and for us not to have to be led by the nose by bourgeois identity politics and nonprofits and so on, but to take a real global class view of our struggle. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol.
Hi, everyone, and thanks very much for organizing this. I feel incredibly sad right now. I have a sort of disparate things, but they all connect with Lauren. I remember, like, very often Lauren would call me like at 12 o'clock at night, and he'd go, "Is this too late?" And I go, No, it's okay, Lauren. And he's the only one that I would accept a phone call from that late at night. But I know Lauren was a night bird. Anyway, so but he was always seeking some answers, right? And he would go to everybody and he would call me and he'd go, "What do you think about this? What do you think about, the uprising or the lack of it? Do you think this means anything?" And it was like he was just always seeking answers. And I appreciated that about him because he opened up the door to have really interesting conversations all the time. And I know I'm going to miss that a lot. When Lauren knew that I was going to Morocco, he called me. He goes, "I bought you a book, and you is it okay if I give it to you?" So I said, "Yes, of course." And he bought me a book on Morocco, and he knew I was learning Spanish, so he bought me a book saying how easy it is to learn Spanish. But the point that I'm making is that he was very generous in terms of wanting to help people out when he could connect with them, and I appreciated that tremendously. And I mean, Lauren and I had like a lot of differences about the Bolshevik Revolution, and he was always talking about the anarchist uprising, and the Bolsheviks put it down. But it was okay because Lauren was really seeking answers. It wasn't that I ever was able to, persuade him that the Bolsheviks were right and he wasn't, but he was always seeking answers. He was always seeking the truth. He was always trying to find, solutions to problems. I think the thing that made me saddest is that I lost contact with him a couple of years ago, and then he emailed me and he said, "It's not you, Carol, it's me." And I really didn't know what happened until I heard that Lauren died. But I know that he's somebody that I miss a lot because we were able to talk for hours and hours. I'd meet him at that diner downtown on West 4th Street, or he lived in my neighborhood for some time in the Bronx. And so we just go to the park and talk about politics. But he was always, always, always curious and wanting to know. Not that he wanted to impose anything, but he wanted to know what other people thought, and to give him ideas, not for himself, to test his own views. He was just the one of the last things I wanted to say was that whatever disagreements we had obviously more agreements than not, and he was profoundly, really profoundly hated Zionism. And so we spent a lot of time talking about Zionism and what's going on in Israel Palestine. And really not only felt terrible for what the Zionists were doing to the Arab population, but what did this mean about, Judaism? And, he was fearful that this would reflect in a very bad way when, he was an internationalist, he was a communist, and he wanted everybody, to live in peace and in communism. So I just wanted to, say how sad I feel, and I'm sorry to, I send my condolences to both Michael and to Sharon. And Amiri, I just wanted to say that one last thing, that he had tremendous respect for you, and he would tell me that all the time. So you can take that, with you also.
Thank you, Carol. Harvey?
Thanks, and I'm also grateful for the organizers of this memorial. I have continued to be in a kind of state of denial about this loss for all, and I can't imagine how great that loss must be for both Sharon and for Mike. I met Lauren when he was 21. So he was a senior at Berkeley, and I was a graduate student. And within, it's couldn't be 5 minutes of having been introduced to him in a famous place in Berkeley called the Cafe Espresso, where a lot of the left intellectuals hung out and nursed a cup of coffee for the whole day. Within 5 minutes, we immediately were arguing. This was right after the collapse of SDS, which I had been present to watch. I had also recently come back from a year in France, so I had gone over as a Marxist-Leninist and came back without the Leninism. And Lauren basically went into a kind of analysis of the failure of SDS and other things. And it was, from my point of view, a kind of typical Trotskyist response, and it got my back up. So we had a huge argument. And when I left, I thought, well, this is a guy who's, you know, gonna, just like all of the other Trotskyists I had known at Berkeley. I'd been at Berkeley for a number of years already. But a few days later, much to my astonishment, 11 o'clock at night, he showed up at my door, which was a measure of Lauren's interest in argument and disagreement. And he showed up probably every other night for the next year, again, around 11 or 12. We would talk till 6. I rarely saw the sun during that year, as we tried to cope with where the left was at the time and what the loss of certain groups was and what we thought about everything, culturally and otherwise, which makes me want to say, as Amiri and others have alluded to, Lauren, I just had to teach something about the Frankfurt School and the conception of totality. One of the things about Lauren that was quite remarkable was, in a sense, he really believed in it. That is, he really believed in the connection between so many different things. He looked for that connection. In a way, he forged it. By forged it, I don't mean faked it. I mean, he shaped it. I think that is partly what accounts for his staggering range of interests and his ability to link developments in almost every aspect of human creative life to other aspects and to social developments and to Marxism. It was a remarkable quality of his, I think. Even when he and I, over the years, had considerable political differences, he had interests in Lyndon LaRouche, Lynn Marcus, as I knew him years before, in the Labor Committee, and we often disagreed about directions that he was going in. But I think that part of what I found in going back to his writings, which I've been doing, and I have them all over, I'm hoping actually to find the honors thesis he wrote as a senior, which was a priceless attempt to move from being an intellectual historian and social historian to a political activist, so that I could share it with others. It may be that somewhere others have a copy of this. What I find so remarkable in the writings right now is not so much their theoretical acuity as his voice. Lauren was a person also of tremendous wit and self-irony. He could make fun of himself, his positions, his history, his world. And as I said, part of what he's left is not just his intellectual insight and capacity, but his ability to translate his physical voice, it seems to me, in the readings. Perhaps it's an hallucination on my part, but when I read them, I am reconnected to him in a way I just realized in the last few days, stumbling on some other of his writings in my office, and it's cushioned some of this loss that he remains, in a sense, available to all of us for different kinds of reasons. But in some ways, through the writings, I can hear him again, and that's a real vital part of his legacy, I would say. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Ross. Hi,
thanks again to the organizers for setting this up. I met Lauren 4 or 5 times, beginning really in 2012, gave a talk along with David Harvey and Paul Maddock Jr. and Andrew Kleiman, I believe. And really from that point, you know, I was incredibly impressed by just the range of his knowledge and the depth of his theoretical insights. He's been such an inspiration to me, personally, intellectually, and really, as I expressed to John, you know, upon hearing of his passing, it's just, you know, for me, it's strange to live in a world where someone whose thought I felt was so alive to it and so, you know, just plugged into everything that was going on, to live in a world where, you know, that person is no longer there. And yeah, it's just something, you know, that the whole generation, you know, that he belonged to, you know, is aging, and, you know, we need to keep alive, you know, as much as we can through his writings, through his archive. I was so happy to see that his website was restored not long after his passing. Yeah, just thanks to everybody. I've really enjoyed hearing all of the recollections of Lauren's work. Just, yeah, incredible stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, John. And thank you, everybody, for organizing this. I feel very sad. I'm not ready for the generation who made the revolutions and or lived through the movements in the 60s to pass. And Lauren's passing is really bringing that up for me. And I think he was the link between the 60s and, you know, the Occupy movement and the movements that we were a part of in the early 2010s and then what's going on now. And I want to speak to, we were talking about this earlier, how good of a mentor he was. And I think for me, that's how I make sense of, you know, moving forward is, you know, I want to learn to be the kind of elder that he was. That's how I want to relate to the young people who hopefully will make a revolution. You know, he created these learning environments where, you know, we could really work through ideas, and he was very, you know, he would challenge me to you know, work through contradictions in my ideas. And that was always tied to praxis. Like, you know, he'd be so excited about hearing what was going on in the struggles, you know, that we were involved in. And he would really challenge us, but then also be really supportive as a person. We're really supportive of us as people, and just with a lot of warmth, a lot of intellectual curiosity, a lot of playfulness, and those are qualities that I really want to embody and carry on as a mentor and a teacher. I really want to echo what Amiri, thank you, that was brilliant. I really agree strongly with what you said about his legacy around religion and spirituality, the origins of Marxism, and Renaissance cosmobiology, the work on Melville, all of that had a huge impact on me. You know, I was a Christian, you know, trying to find my way into revolutionary politics. And he helped me to find an exit route from, you know, from sort of unsustainable Christian positions I was in, without having to adopt kind of a crass secularist traditional view, and just seeing the sensuous praxis aspects of Marxism that have had such a huge impact on me over the years. Idris, I see your work also is carrying on some of that tradition as well. Your work in 2020 had a huge impact on me as well. And Amiri, I'm really grateful for our conversations continuing, you know, Lauren's work in those senses. His take on Ernst Bloch of like looking for looking at utopian visions in popular culture and seeing how they could be realized in communism in a, you know, an imperfect way as sensuous praxis, that seems really important. That pairs well with Munoz's work and like looking at we can look at like queer liberation, the utopian potentials there as well, and how that could be realized in communism. So yeah, Andrzej, I was really agreed with what you said about transliberation. And I'm thinking about Lauren a lot in that sense. Just trying to appreciate, even in the alienated forms, all of these cultural and spiritual traditions, and then linking that, like what is the actual sensuous praxis that can link into like a communist praxis moving forward. Thank you all for archiving his work. I'm looking forward to reading more and learning more from him and continuing his legacy in these ways. Thank you all.
Thank you. Sam.
Hi. Thank you for all the beautiful words that have already been spent on Lauren. And again, condolences to Sharon and Michael. I have to say, I've never seen you, but it's very soothing to see you because you and Lauren look so much alike. I hope that's okay I say that. I knew Lauren because my father was a very close comrade and friend with Lauren. So when Stephen was talking about his wondering what his kids were thinking of Lauren in the living room, I was one of the kids, when Lauren was speaking with my father and carrying on and so on. And so I have vivid memories of him as a child. I remember his bed made of books. And so he made, big impression on me from a very young age. And I hope this isn't too anecdotal, but when we moved to Italy and Lauren would come and visit our family, I was in, I think, middle school. I was still quite young, and we went out to have a pizza. And he ordered, and I remember I didn't really think much of Lauren. He was just a friend of my father, and he ordered a pizza with pesto in Italian. And I don't know why, but in middle school, I was just so impressed. I thought, oh, those two things, I never thought to put them together. And he said it in Italian. And in that moment, I just had a kind of a burst of affection for Lauren, just as a person. Years later, I, ended up studying Capital with him and kind of learning to read Marx. Just by witnessing his humility in reading Marx. Another small moment where my affection towards Lauren grew was when I missed one of the appointments for the Capital study group. I was presenting and I called in sick, and he was very stern with me on the phone, and he said, Sam, that's not how it works. I guess I'll have to take your pages today. And he gave me quite a stern talking. And I mean, but the way I took that was, again, affection. I mean, in the way, like Amir, you were saying, almost a father figure, a kind of mentor. So he really was very became important political figure. Later, much later, I found his writings, and I said, "Oh, what a treasure chest!" I had no idea, really. And what I wanted to say, just to get across, is I just wrote down what I wanted to say, and I wrote revolutionary affection. And what I've learned, I think, from Lauren, and I'm sure many of you probably feel the same way, is that many of the thoughts and many of the communistic ideas that I have, they're not just coming from, a transferal of theory, but or a kind of, oh, I read the right texts, now I got it. But it really grew and is intertwined with a kind of camaraderie affection. So there's a kind of human element that is tied up in the theory, let's say, that I can't take apart. And Lauren is definitely a linchpin in that, maybe we could talk about the cosmos and that. But for me, it's just revolutionary affection with Lauren. Last small thing I want to say, it's also very surprising. I'm not, that's not surprising, but so much of the Italian milieu knows Lauren. They always talk about Goldner, Goldner. We know Goldner. He came to visit us, and he was very important for the because of course the Italians in the 60s and 70s and still are still learning about Bordiga, right? They had to re-simulate Bordiga themselves, and Lauren actually was part of that, part of that. So that's it. So thank you again for everyone's words. And
Sander, and this may be the last person, unfortunately. Sander. You have to unmute yourself, Sander.
And I will be very short because you all spoke already so eloquently, and everybody said the right things. We lost a brilliant and very important voice, and my deepest condolences to Sharon and to Lauren's brother and all his friends. I think in the first place, he was a true revolutionist and he loved life very much. And I think these two things really go together. A true revolutionary must be someone who acts from this love as a starting point. And just a little anecdote to say that he was not only a very great serious writer, but he also had a great sense of humor. We were once with him in Korea, and we were at a restaurant, and maybe you know those big the fish restaurants where they have like fish tanks in which big fish are swimming. And I was taking a picture of that with Lauren on the other side. So on the picture, you could see the fish and a smiling Lauren. And Lauren liked that picture and he said we should publish it in our magazine, Internationalist Perspective, with the caption, "We always thought there was something fishy about Goldner." Just as an example of his wonderful sense of humor. Thank you all for doing this.
Thank you, Senator. So just, or do we only have, I don't know if it's going to get cut off at 3 o'clock or not, but I wanted to say for those of you who spoke during the first half of the meeting where I managed to bungle the recording, I might want to ask you, especially if you have something in writing that was approximated what you said, please consider sending that on to me. And I'll follow up with an email, but we'll figure out what. All right. I mean,
John, what about that link? Did you want to share that link?
Thank you, John. Yes. Oh, do you have it?
I do.
Yeah. So this is a link of a few recent, you know, testimonials about Lauren, including one by Eve, who's here with us. One that Larry Cohn, who's here with us, translated from Italian. And one by Stephen Chang, who's also with us, and then as well some link to other resources that people might find helpful about various aspects of Lauren's work and whatever. And I do hope that this, you know, somehow we can in fact figure out how to sustain, preserve, and enhance Lauren's legacy.
John, you know, Gifford is saying that it, and I thought this might happen. They need to get permission to access the doc. I do think that you can change the permission to say that anyone with the link can access it.
Okay, give me a moment.
You might want to do that. You don't really need to do it while everyone's on screen, but that is something that anyway people are going to need.
Why wouldn't people want to see me, you know, kind of make a mess of this stuff?
Exactly. Right? Well, fair enough. Yeah. Do you want to share your screen while you try to do it?
I'm not going to do that. I will share. I'll change it. And since you have the link, you can, in fact, you know, hopefully in a short period of time, get access to what's there. And I and others, including some people who are part of this group, will keep you informed of the work that we do going forward. And I want to thank you all for coming. I want to repeat to Sharon and Mike for their, you know, contributions, and to John for his work, and for all of you, to kind of those of you who spoke, those who didn't, about joining us for this. And I hope it's as memorable for you as it is for me.
John, a couple.
Thank you, John. This is Mike Goldner. I just was wondering if maybe we wanted to continue, since we have the convenience of Zoom, to have this maybe an anniversary moratorium or tribute or some kind of ongoing Zoom meeting?
Sure, Michael. I mean, that off the top of my head, that sounds like a good idea. what are we up to in a year? So, let's, I mean, I really do need to talk about some of these projects with some of the other people who are part of this meeting, who might be able to contribute some time and effort to sustaining things. But I will remember that, Michael. Thank you.
Appreciate your efforts.
John.
There's also the chat. So, like, the chat is recorded, and you'll get the chat, and you could send that out to everybody who was on the group. I think there's a number of links and comments people might want to have access to. And that's another way also. I don't know, like, if you want to share the link to the Google, that folder, whether you want to send that out to all the people you invited to the meeting or something like that. But I think, certainly the chat, I think it would be good to share, at least with the folks who are on this.
Okay, thanks. Okay, is there anything else that I'm not noticing that I should? Okay, once again, thank you all very much. Be well, and remember Lauren. Okay, take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.